Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Ooh, ocean colour scene. That went from left to right to left in my ears, made me feel all woozy. Great, great song. The Riverboat Song from their second album, Moseley Shoals, released as their lead-in single on the 5th of February in 1996 on the MCA record label. The album was released a couple of months later.
Blew me away, because it was a time signature. That was the first thing, and it's like 6/8, something like that, and you just don't hear my 6/8. And then his guitar sound, Craddo, Steve Craddock.
Yes.
What a great player, fantastic guitar player. And then started working with Paul Weller, of course, with his solo records after Ocean Colour Scene. But it's a great riff. And was it Evans?
Chris Evans,
that's right, yeah,
that's
because
right.
It, TGI Friday, is it?
TFI Friday.
TFI, TGI, I think.
Thank God, I suppose, yeah. To thank
yeah, exactly.
The F word.
Yeah, well, yeah, but they were on there, and, you know, I thought they were great. It's a great record, and they sounded great live as well, great live band, you know. But on this, it's dead spacious, and there's just loads of raw guitar, you know. It's like something from the 60s Cream or something like that, you know. It's not really heavily processed. There's organ in there and stuff. Lots of panning, as you said, going on, whirling and yeah. Bit of feedback. But great sound.
Ocean Colour Scene, though, they're like a... Well, I have a story about Ocean Colour Scene.
Oh.
Well, only the fact that I have a mate, Tim Allen, and he used to be in a band called K, and the band bought their old splitter van.
No.
So I used to go off with the guys when they used to play festivals and stuff in Ocean Colour Scene's old tour van.
Very, very cool.
Well, it's fun. And it's nice, though. They were formed in Solihull in 1989, but they didn't have a good start of it, you know. And their story is one of real struggle, actually. Mm. They formed after, this is what a lot of time happens. You know, when everyone's in a band and then that band breaks up and then you get another two bands break up and they form a band from the people. Yeah, it happens all the time. And they had their first single, Sway, released in September 1990 during the indie era. And here we go again. You get signed, and they were signed to, it's called Puffed, Pshht, whatever it's called, Pshht, record label. And but they got swallowed up because their label got signed to Phonogram. And so they recorded their eponymous debut album, but it was remixed against their wishes to fit in with the baggy indie dance musical trend at the time.
Ah.
So they changed their sound and the album flopped.
Yeah.
So they went back on the dole.
No. And
yeah, but it all changed because of Paul Weller. Because Paul invited the band to support him on some dates on tour. And on the back of those performances, that's when Craddo got to play on Paul Weller's singles, and vocalist Simon Fowler was singing on the album as well, Wildwood. But do you know what I like about Craddo? I don't know why. Why do you call him Craddo? I don't know. It's funny.
Apparently his nickname is something else, like Betty or something. I'll tell you in a minute.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what I like about the fact is when he went on tour, he basically kept the band going. He was giving them all money. From the money that when he was playing with Paul Weller.
Okay.
Isn't that lovely?
Isn't it lovely?
Yeah, I thought that, so it kept the band going. And so they recorded some demos and stuff. And then after hearing one of their tapes, Noel Gallagher heard them. And invited them to play with Oasis on their 1995 tour.
Right.
And they also played, and they were one of the bands that played at Nebworth when Oasis played.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a big story. I feel angst, actually. I can really feel it with them because it's like, that's not been easy. I mean, I saw them. I was up in Edinburgh one year for Hogmanay and they were playing, but you couldn't get anywhere near the stage. I mean, it was literally like...
Yeah, rammed.
Millions of sardines, and I don't like crowds, so it was a bit weird. Trying to duck people, trying to snog you all the time. Random strangers, it's like, that's Hogmanay. Anyway, carry on.
Not any of that nonsense.
Well...
To
the soundtrack of Ocean Colour Scene, I'm there in Hogmanay diving around people trying to escape.
Well, the old Craddo also played with the Specials. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
2014, yeah. Yeah, a really cool guy, you know. He's also known as Fanny, that's his name. They call him Fanny. Fanny Craddock, of course. From the TV chef days. The old Fanny Craddock. Anyway, yeah, but it really is influenced by Led Zeppelin. You can hear it. Stink reeks.
Get out of here.
The bonzo bonzonator. You know, that like four sticks thing going on. It's a really, really cool time. The interesting thing is that we always have a cool connection with these sort of things.
Yeah.
And Paul Weller, his band, the bass player that is playing in it now, is our bass player from the 36 album who played alongside Steve Rowe played, but also so did
Craig Fletcher.
That's right.
No.
Yes, indeed. But it's not Craig that's playing, it's Jake, his son, is playing bass with Paul Weller. That's right.
Get out of here.
With Crado on guitar.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so they are. And how he got the gig, I don't know. Because he didn't play bass. He's a guitar player. But he's a bit of a pretty boy, you know. And I think he's also a charmer like his dad. Because his dad, the only problem with Craig is if you go anywhere with him in the studio, you can't do anything because you're laughing all the time. He's constantly cracking jokes. And one thing I always remember was in the studio with him. Is when you hear Shaker, he'll go, snake! And it's like Rattlesnake, of course, you know. So you hear that, and all of a sudden you'll hear, there's an every bus out laughing, and, you know. So all the studio time, he's paying a lot of money, you know, and he's constantly cracking jokes. But he's a lovely, lovely guy. Sabbath, Paranoid, the first single from their second album, Paranoid, surprisingly enough, released on the 7th of August 1970, 6 months after their debut album. That, it comes out the speakers, kicks you around the floor and beats you in the head. Iommi is the master of the guitar riff. I know there's many masters of guitar riffs. There's Blackmore, there's all these, you know, there's a lot of new guys out there that are really doing some great riffs. But Iommi is the fountain head. I actually think he's written better riffs than Jimmy Page. That's my personal opinion. And instantly, you know, I mean, and I've talked wax lyrical for ages about Master of Reality, you know, the album.
Yeah.
With Into the Void on, which is the heaviest song that has ever been created. You know, they can drop the trousers, these doom metal boys, you know what I mean? Not just drop the key down a D or a C or a B. They go in lower and lower trying to get it doom sounding. But Iommi, he doesn't need to. He's just doomy. And this track was recorded at Rockfield Studios.
It's crazy.
It's absolutely incredible, which is very, very close to a gig that we're doing in Ross on Wye. We did a show a few weeks ago about Ross on Wye. Because the whole thing about these shows that we're doing recently is all about the tour.
It is, indeed.
It's all about our tour that we're doing in October in the UK. And we're going to be playing the Temperance on Monday, October the 2nd.
The Temperance Bar.
In Leamington Spa. The Temperance Bar in Leamington Spa.
A cafe, yeah.
And so we're featuring bands from the cities that are close to the venues that we're actually doing. And Birmingham, of course, is I'm going to use the word again, fountainhead of rock. The black country, darkness and despair. Last week, we had on Sheffield, which is all a bit 80s, top-tastic, ABC, let's look. Here, we've got somebody screaming paranoid. We've got, you know, Bill Ward beating the shit out of his kit. Geezer Butler, who wrote all the lyrics he's on bass, of course. He wrote all the lyrics for Sabbath. And apparently, they needed a filler for the album, and wrote it in 3 minutes. 3 minutes. And it's one of the greatest rock and roll songs ever to be created. And apparently Ozzy was reading off the sheet as he was singing it. He'd just done it a couple of minutes before and he was reading the lyrics off the sheet. What a great story. What a track.
Can you imagine, though, when we worked at Rockfield a couple of years ago, like the Black Sabbath guys rocking around there and like photos of them, I've seen them in the fields and stuff and down by the river or something. I think they were punting or something at one point. It's just like, what a load of buffoons. I bet they had so much fun, actually.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's the thing, is that they were all, because they were so successful so quickly, they went absolutely berserk. Ozzy was pissed and drugged up and everything. Everybody was totally crazy. Iommi, I think, was the only one that kept it together, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was just great. But the interesting thing Ozzy said, he said the album title had nothing to do with the sleeve. What the fuck does a bloke dressed as a pig with a sword in his hand got to do with being paranoid? I don't know. But they decided to change the album without changing the artwork. And he also said, Geezer came up with these heavy-duty lyrics about death and destruction. No wonder we never got any chicks at our gigs.
Once prompted you to stay.
Duran Duran, Ordinary World, released in December 1992 as the first single from their seventh studio album, commonly known as the Wedding Album, but it's officially called Duran Duran, and it was released on the Parlophone record label. It went to number one on the US Billboard Mainstream Top 40, the Canadian RPM Top Singles Chart, and the Italian Singles Chart, and peaked at number three in the Billboard Hot 100, number two in Iceland and Sweden, number six in the UK Singles Chart. And I've got to say, I love that song. There's something about it when I hear it. It makes me so emotional. It's just, it just takes you over.
It's great. Great lyric and great... Great playing. I mean, interestingly, the drums were Steve Ferrone on that, the mighty, mighty Steve Ferrone, and Warren Cucurullo, who was the guitar player of Frank Zappa's band, and he's playing the solo and that line. He did that line. So, yeah, so old, you know, old Nick Rhodes actually did all the arrangement on the keyboards.
Did he?
Jones? Yeah, I think he produced it.
cool.
And but it's a marvelous record, and it resonates with me a lot as well, because when I was on the Isle of Man the first time, I put together, along with some friends, a charity do for called One Night Stand. And what we did is we got all the vocalists from all the different camps, because it's like anything else, there's camps everywhere, you know, all the different vocalists who never really spoke to each other, and they had to perform one song each, but without an instrument, so they just had to sing. So whether you're a guitar player, you had to just sing. And, you know, we had everybody, and it was a great night. We did a great, great for charity, and it was wonderful. And you did a song.
I did. I sang Imogen Heap's Blanket.
You certainly did.
Urban Species, yeah.
And I actually played guitar, because the house band was me. There was Danny on drums. There was Steve Rowe and Chris Glaister on keyboards.
Yeah, a tight band, actually.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really. Well, we rehearsed a lot as well, and it was just marvellous.
It was emotional. It's
Kath
brilliant,
Crowe,
actually.
Who sadly is no longer with us, she died of cancer, but she was on it. But the person that sang this record is a guy called Barry Nelson. And Barry, a very troublesome man indeed, but he's a songwriter, and he's been around an awful long time, and he's written some great songs. And I know him, you know, I know him very, very well. I've played in his band and stuff. But he did this, and he got really, really emotional.
Yeah, I remember.
About it.
Beautiful. It was, and I was really intrigued, actually, that he chose that song to sing, because it's perfect. Because he's got such a big heart, that guy. And you'll never forget that.
No, it was a really wonderful night. Very, very special on the Isle of Man, you know.
That's true.
Our friend Mark Cleeter did the sound.
He did.
So, Cleeto.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
And just, you know, when you talk about Duran Duran, I've got to say thank you to my younger sister, Lorna, because it's all her fault that I got to know everything about them. About their socks, about everything, about the fact that Simon Le Bon rocked up for an audition wearing leopard skin pants and they just gave him the job.
Of course.
Well, he had to sing, obviously. But and literally, as I said in the show last week, it's like half of my bedroom growing up was littered with Duran Duran posters. In fact, I noticed that Simon Le Bon's poster was actually getting a bit worn, and I realised that Lorna was kissing him goodnight on the poster.
No.
She'll kill me.
That's fantastic.
But we used to stay, because it was all MTV stuff, you know, because they were like the pioneers of music videos. So we used to watch
all
the
video,
time.
If you remember the Rio video on the boat.
You always hear it, don't you, when you're on a boat? That song goes to your head.
And amazing, you know, their whole new romantic movement, because them and Spandau, you know, were the ones, weren't they, really?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Great stuff.
It's great. And John Taylor, he was actually called Nigel. I didn't realise that he changed his name to John. But you always used to see the way he did walk to the front of the stage. He was so tall and lanky. Still is, obviously. And kicks his leg up and stuff. But I've got to say that that for me, I think just over the time, and just their longevity as well, and working with Nile Rodgers, who's like a fifth or sixth or whatever, how many members of the band there are now, but always been a part of that. And I'm just really proud of the way that they've, and celebrate them, you know, because they've gone up and down, haven't they? They've been sailing waves of success, and they've just had such a great success, and times when they've been out of fashion, and they've carried on. And they all started off, you know, when they were working together. They used to work at the Rum Runner Club in Birmingham, and they opened for Hazel O'Connor. And that's how, you know, they started building up their songs. And then they got signed to EMI, and then it was, you know, you don't look back. But I thought, well done, guys.
Yeah, and I met him at Annabelle's, at Simon Le Bon.
I remember you telling me, you said he was really nice. You said he was taller than or something.
Yeah, he was tall, and he's very charismatic, and he just walked in. And I said a couple of words to him. He didn't know who I was, you know, but it was a cool thing, you know. It's a cool thing to meet Simon Le Bon.
I'm so glad I found
Editors, Munich, originally released on the 18th of April 2005. It's the second single from their debut album, The Back Room, on the Kitchenware record label. Now, the lads, yes, James and Joe, love the Editors, and that's how I got into them. And we've actually got a CD kicking around somewhere, which I'm sure they want back, or one of them will want it back at some stage. Yeah, great that's band, you know. I love his voice, his very dramatic voice. You know, great voice. And they are, of course, from Birmingham.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why they're on the show, other than, of course, like the song, because this week is all about Birmingham. We're playing at
the Temperance
Bar in Birmingham, or in Leominster Spa, I should say. And we're doing shows based around these venues for our tour in October, just sort of to get a musical flavour of the area and stuff. So really cool. And we're looking forward to doing those gigs.
Yeah, so October the 2nd, actually.
Oh, right, great.
Which is a Monday.
Monday night.
We're in Wales. So we're in Ross and Wye on the Saturday. Well, in fact, we're in St Albans before that on the 29th. Ross and Wye on the 30th. Mid Wales R&B Club in Brecon on the Sunday. And then the Temperance Bar in Leamington Spa.
Temperance Bar, Leamington Spa. I think we said this before, it's all right.
On Monday the 2nd, I know. Yeah. It's and that's just a little bit that we've got like 12 dates and counting at the moment for our UK tour. But yeah, come and see us and come and hang out. We're going to share our new music with you. So the Editors, don't know much about them. Formed in Birmingham in 2002.
Yeah.
They were all taking a music technology course together. And you know what's great about that is that you get to use the rehearsal rooms and you get to use the recording studios, a bit like when I was at Salford. They were the first course in the country to run a BA in popular music and recording. So in the basement were recording studios.
And you used to hang out down there, even though you weren't on that course.
No, I was on a media and performance course. I wasn't on the musician's course per se, but I was the first non-musician to do a lunchtime concert.
Why were you not on the music course?
I don't know. I think, well, I was doing studying radio, theatre, singing, this like performance video. I kind of just did a tapas really just to find out what I wanted to do. You know, because sometimes, and to be around like-minded people, to be around peers, just to sort of be in that sort of environment and just to find out, because I kind of have got loads of questions. I was just so curious. I just wanted to find out about everything, really.
I think the interesting thing about you is the fact that now you've really blossomed as an artist, really, I think. You know, since getting together with me.
Mr. Campbell.
Yeah, that's something to do with that. But, you know, because now you're doing collage work, you've done a lot of art in the past, I know that, but you've never really promoted it. But now we're actually starting to do that, and you've designed the album cover for the new...
Starlight One,
yeah, which is a collage, and it's really cool. If you want to take a look at it, it's you can find it at starlight-campbell.com, because the new album is now available to pre-order.
It
will be available just before the tour in September on 180-gram vinyl, milky clear, and also on CD, and a digital download and subscription from Bandcamp.
Yeah, so how exciting is that? So so we're talking about sort of our tour, and we're talking about Birmingham, and we've got the editors there. I didn't know they were nominated for a Mercury Prize in 2006.
Yeah, they were actually quite big at the time. Yeah. They just went bang, you know, into the scene.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Do you remember seeing them? We saw them when we were watching Glastonbury one year. They were on, remember?
I think you're right, yeah.
I think we did, because we watched them, and they recorded in at Mayfair Studios in London with Loz Beazle.
Who's Loz Beazle?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, Loz, what's a Loz Beazle?
Oh, yeah, produced
cool.
by Jim Abbas, of course, of the Arctic Monkeys and Kasabian.
Yeah. We were talking about him last week, weren't we?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
The Arctic Monkeys, of course, are from Sheffield, and last week was about Sheffield.
And do you know how they got their break as well? They supported Franz Ferdinand on their tour, which then led to their own headlining tour. And that's how it rolls.
Wasting, out of work and down. All inside, it's so frustrating as I drift from town to town. Feels though nobody cares if I live or die. So I might as well begin to put some action in my life. Breaking the law, breaking the law.
Judas Priest, Breaking the Law, from their sixth studio album, British Steel, released on, sounding like you, on the 14th of April 1980 by Columbia Records. Judas Priest, know nothing about them, ready?
Well, the thing is that they were part of the new metal, British metal revolution, right? And just as Whitefire was my first band, which were basically British metal, or British rock, actually, decided to call it a day, this all started to come up, like the Tigers of Pantang and all those sort of guys, you know?
Oh, flipping nowhere.
And, yeah, so we made a tactical error there, but it was okay. We were still rocking it with Roadrunner, but it was like more punk blues. Anyway, that's a different matter. Let's get on to Judas Priest. One of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time, metal bands, you know, heavy metal. They've sold over 50 million records. I mean, that's a lot of fucking vinyl. A lot of shit going on, you know? Tremendous. Ranks in one of the greatest metal bands of all time. And the thing that really does it for me about Judas Priest, because I don't have one album. And I've not been a huge fan because this sort of music, it didn't really get me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But Rob Halford, the vocalist, came out openly gay. And he was like, in this world of leather and rock and macho dick-waving stuff, you know?
Yeah.
He came out openly gay and he broke down on TV,
yeah,
when he announced it. He said, it's great, come out of the club. But But it was like a shining light. All of a sudden, this whole thing about macho, you know, rock,
yeah,
just disintegrated with Rob Halford, who is one of the greatest rock and roll, they say he's one of the greatest stage presences, you know, operatic vocal, you know. He's like the sort of metal version of Freddie Mercury, if you know what I mean. In a way, it's like amazing. Anyway, so that's old Rob, you know. So we love Rob. He's a cool guy.
Wow. So that's kind of cool then, because it opened up the whole sort of metal scene to everyone, in a sense. Because I remember, I mean, when I used to go and see Pride parades in Manchester, that's some of the influences as well, the leather and the studs and all the big music.
Well, so, he probably started it all off, you know what I mean, all that carry on. Because, I mean, he's... But originally, everybody... Who'd have actually thought he was gay, you know?
No.
He's upstage and he's, like, rocking out with his, you know... And they're crazy. I mean, they're still going. They're still rocking
still
out.
Are they still
going? Oh, yeah, of course they are. Yeah, they're still rocking the shit, you know? 50 million records. Goodness me.
Well, they've this album, though, when I started looking into about the band, they recorded it at Tittenhurst Park, which is the home of Ringo Starr.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it was produced by Tom Allom, who'd worked with Black Sabbath, Def Leppard, Straubs.
Interesting.
Straubs,
yeah.
And they were saying that for the breaking glass effect, they used the milk bottles that the milkman had brought round that morning to smash. And the police siren was actually guitarist K.K. Downing using the tremolo arm on his Stratocaster.
Bye. isn't love strange? A word we arrange with no thought or care. Maker of despair. Each breath that we breathe.
Isn't Life Strange, from their eighth album, The Seventh Sojourn, the seventh by this particular lineup, released on the 23rd of October 1972 in the UK, and 3 weeks later in the USA on the Threshold, which is their own Decca label, record label. Queen. That's all I've got to say about that. Freddie Mercury was listening to that. Yeah, that high vocal, very, very, like Roger Taylor's vocal in Queen. The guitar, Brian May. It just sounds like Brian May. That guitar solo, well, the part, it's not like a solo, it's the part. It brings me to tears. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's Justin Hayward at his most brilliant, great fuzz sound. And the song, what a great song. And when it comes in, the orchestration, it's majestic, it's massive, yeah. And you know, it's all down to Mike Pinder, because when Mike Pinder left, who played keyboards, Chamberlain, which is the precursor to the Mellotron,
yeah,
harmonium and stuff, you know, it was just, you know, they just created such a great sound, and I love this band. And they're from Birmingham, of course, that's what we're playing them today, but I really love them. And Graham Edge, dead, God bless him, I think, well, Ray Thomas as well. And, you know, Just fantastic. But it's written by John Lodge, the bass player, which is the most interesting thing about it. But anyway, I just love that band, and it is sensational. Art rock at its most brilliant.
Led Zeppelin, The Ocean, from their fifth studio album, Houses of the Holy, released on the 28th of March in 1973 on Atlantic Records. What a band.
Well, every time I listen to this, we haven't had Led Zeppelin on for some time, and it just blows me away. Bonham sounds like he's building a shed back there. He's beating the shit out of those drums, and it's so, you can hear it, it's so loud. The engineer on this is Eddie Kramer, and always produced by Jimmy Page. All the records are produced by Jimmy Page, who has subsequently gone on to curate Led Zeppelin, you know, and he's a bit pickled in aspic, really, because he hasn't really moved on. He's not moved on at all. Even the stuff he did, you know, with the Firm and all that stuff, it didn't move on. It was, you know, it was always Led Zeppelin. It always has been Led Zeppelin. It was always his band. And, you know, quite rightly so. But he wanted a little bit of Jimi Hendrix magic on this record. That's why he got Eddie Kramer into engineering.
Ah, okay.
Because, you know, prior to that...
Thinking about that, makes sense.
Well, they had Andy Johns, of course, on Led Zeppelin 4. But Led Zeppelin 5, I think, or House of the Holy, is my favourite Led Zeppelin album, I think. Out of all of them, even, I mean, I listen to all of them, they've all got great songs and I love them all, but this, I don't know what it is. And The Ocean's always been a great thing. I love that bit in the middle, which is also really camp, you know, la, 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 la. And then Bonzo comes in, you know, bagadagadag, dagadagad. What a great, and at the end, John Paul Jones puts his R&B in the old school R&B rhythm and blues credentials.
He does, because it goes into that.
Yeah, into that. Yeah, blues swing.
I recognise that.
Sounds like Susie Starlight there. And it's absolutely astoundingly brilliant. And his guitar playing, you know, on this record is great as well, because of course the Rain songs on here, which he recorded most of it at home, and they're tuning. You know, I've been playing it, and I might just at some stage do a little video of me doing it. We might just do it.
I love that. You know, when you were playing that, it's like it echoes through the house, and it rocks me. It's really quite beautiful. I've just had a thought as well. You know, as you talk about Led Zeppelin, like, what is it that this band has done that you've fallen in love with then, but it's like, and even though they don't dominate our musical taste now, and we're still totally in, you know, looking at listening to new music and new artists, and we've gone on adventures musically all around the world, but every time you play them, it's like they're rock solid right back in the bang in the middle of your heart. And I wonder what it is.
Well, you see, it's these guys and the Moody Blues we've had on tonight as well, and Black Sabbath, you know, these are bands that I grew up with, but even now they stand up. Even now you hear people replicating what they're doing, or trying to replicate, because they can never replicate it.
No.
You know, Greta Van Fleet are a very, very sad and poor approximation of Led Zeppelin, I'm afraid. You know, I don't listen to Greta Van Fleet because I don't think I don't like him. You know, I don't like his guitar play, I don't like the sound, I don't like anything else. I'm very sorry for Greta Van Fleet fans, but I just don't like him. You know, Led Zeppelin are the ones. And Plant on this, his vocals, they were all at the right, the top of the game, you know? Really at the top of the game. Of course, you know Rob Plant. We've talked a few weeks ago, we had the Ross and Wise show. You were talking. So if you want to listen to the stories.
Well, this bloke, which I thought was an old rocker coming into my pub. As a youth, I was like cocky in that respect. It's like, who's that rocker coming into the pub with Kingsley Ward getting his pint?
But if you want to go back and listen to that, because as we said earlier on, these shows are all about the cities around gigs that we're playing. We're playing the Temperance Bar on the 2nd of October, Monday night. It's tickets
in Leamington Spa.
In Leamington Spa, which would be a really great gig.
Yeah, it's up close and personal one. This is actually quite a small venue, but we wanted to play a really intimate venue, so we've got some bigger venues, and on a Monday night it's the best thing you can do, so it's up close and personal. So come down to Leamington Spa and
how are we going to get all the gear and God
well,
knows,
I know,
because there's a trio, but we've got lots of synthesizers,
I
and
know,
we're doing lots of different
with Ugo Danin
on
drums
new, yeah this
so
new,
yeah. we're gonna adapt, but anyway, that's so it for this week's show,
it is
darling.
Indeed. Yep. So you can catch us at starlight-campbell.com, buy tickets for the tour, and also you can find our Vibes blog on there.
And also pre-order our new album, Starlight One,
which is available now.
Catch you next week.